Well, we don't necessarily know who the enemy is going to be. We don't know what the tactics are going to be. We don't know what the equipment or the weapon mechanism may be. But the one thing that we can focus on is our preparedness and our mental attitudes and kind of our toughness.
Welcome back to Black Snake Bites. I'm your host, Tech Sergeant Kathleen LaCourte. We have a really special guest in the studio today, Command Chief Joe Lewis, and he is new to the seat, to the Command Chief seat. He just came into the position in March of this year. Thank you, Chief Lewis, for being here today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. An honor to be here.
Question for you. I know you're a football fan, So can you tell me, are you a Patriots fan or are you a Bears fan?
This is a funny question. So I grew up a diehard Bears fan, and I always will be. We've all had teams that have struggled throughout the years, and there for a long time, my Bears were very, very bad, and I've even coined it as unwatchable sometimes. So as I was watching games, you know, mostly through like the mid-2000s and on, by halftime, it was like, I'm not even watching this garbage anymore, you know, So I'm flipping through the other channels, and I stumble across, I was at a recruiting school with a diehard Patriots fan, so on Sundays, we'd be hanging out together, we'd watch Patriots game, and I was like, gosh, this Tom Brady guy, I really like the way he plays, and Belichick is the stone cold guy for interviews and stuff like that, So I just kind of naturally started watching them, because it was competitive football, you know, so I'll never not be a Bears fan, but I like the Patriots as well. Now, I did like watching Brady go on to the Bucks and win a Super Bowl there too. And something that's it's kind of carried along with me throughout my different positions out here. Coach Belichick used to have a term, and it was just something as simple as do your job. And he kind of broke it down on an interview. And what he was saying is that at any given point in time, there's 11 players on the field for the offensive side, for the defensive side. And when all 11 players simply do their job, whether that's run the route, make the block, catch the pass, whatever it is, we have a higher success rate of winning on that down. And if you can string together some good downs, equals out into scoring points, we're more likely to win the ball game. So when I look at that as our military and what we do here, we have a certain amount of individuals that all have specific jobs. And when we can all focus on our job and do the best we can, we are more likely to win. So there's even a little sign I had posted up in my old office that said, just simply do your job. And I put it on our medical group coin, because that's how important that philosophy is. It's like, don't try to overdo anything. Everybody comes together as a team and does their specific part. We have a better chance to win. So
I like that.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not a football fan as much as you are. Like, I watch maybe every so often. But I do remember reading an article about Tom Brady and just the way he seems very disciplined and driven.
Yeah, and he's a guy who wasn't a, and again, my wife, if she ever hears this, she'll laugh at me. She's like, oh, you're a Tom Brady fanboy.
Yeah.
He was a guy who wasn't drafted high. You know, he was like a fifth round pick, and he was a backup, and he didn't really get his shot until Bledsoe had an injury. And he came in, and they started winning ball games, and that led to, you know, ultimately all the Super Bowl wins. So he was a guy that I think had a lot of natural talent, but really had to work for it, and I don't think he ever forgot how hard he had to work to get there. I'm a big fan. Outside of football now, he's doing other things. He's still driven into business and other things. But, yeah, it's just kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I really like your corollary to football and comparing it to the military. So what would you say throughout your military career, what has been your driving force as far as, like, what got you from where you started to command chief of the 122nd Fighter Wing?
Gosh, a lot of bad decisions. Commanders, right? No, you know, I've approached every position I've ever held. Simply try to do your best. You know, do your best. Take care of the guys and girls next to you. Try to always look out for the team winning, not just your personal advances there. And, you know, a lot of times people say, like, leaders are made or leaders are born. I think that there's a certain characteristic that some folks just have, and folks tend to gravitate towards them and call it a presence, call it whatever it is. But, like, you have to be willing to make decisions, both easy and hard decisions. You have to stand by that. You really have to know where your own moral compass is. I think if you truly believe in the decisions you're making and they are the right ones, that folks will tend to follow you. And you kind of figure that out in every position when you're given more responsibilities, whether it's, you know, commanding a small fire team or up to a squadron group and now even up to wing level. So just kind of keep some of those basic, basic factors there. It's like, just take care of your people. Do the best you can. And like, one thing I try to make sure I always do, just be nice, right? Just be nice to everybody. And you can be a nice person and still flip the switch and lay into some discipline and all that.
Make hard decisions. You can still be nice.
You still can. But at the end of the day, like, everybody should be treated the same way, right? And that's important to me. And I hope that I project that out to all the airmen.
That's something I've always wondered for people who are in high profile leadership positions. You can't have decision paralysis, like you were just saying. You have to be able to make decisions. But what happens if you make a decision, you find out maybe it wasn't the best decision? Like, how do you deal with that, and how do you handle it?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, and this is just kind of the way it is. Like, they've always said, like, it's lonely at the top, right? You don't necessarily have the same peer group to bounce ideas off of and things, and you have to be able to make a decision. Now, two trains of thought here, right? Making decisions in combat and under stress is one thing. Making a decision where you can kind of take a step back, take a breath, and kind of look at some things and try to come up with the right choice.
Right.
My stance has always been, though, a wrong decision is better than no decision, right? If I just have that paralysis and I sit there and we let things happen, then you're like, oh, gosh, I should have done this. We should have done that. Make the decision based on the information you have. Trust your heart with it. We're not always going to get them right. And when we can, we'll go back and try to rectify those and you know, change it or pivot or do what we need to do. But as a leader, you cannot be afraid to make a decision when you know you're making the legal, the just decision that you think is the best for the organization at that point in time.
What does being chief mean to you? We all know as airmen what chief means on paper. It's a rank and it's a position and it's a lot of responsibility. But what does it mean to actually be chief sitting in that position?
Yeah, that's a deep question. you know, you don't really know until you get there, right? I would say that, you know, three and a half years ago, whenever it was, I promoted to chief. You kind of start to feel that weight a little bit. Like, everybody is coming to you like, hey, chief, what are we going to do? How do you want to handle this? And it goes back to, like, knowing yourself, knowing and trusting decisions you're making, trying to ever make a rash decision or have a preconceived notion like this is the way it should be done. But it's really you're the keeper of all things, right? The airmen are going to come to you for everything from like a breakup at home to a failed fitness test to something great in their career. Like, I see the good, I see the bad. I've sat in my office with members that have, you know, cried about things, and you get up and you want to give them a hug. And then I've gave high fives when it's like, hey, my kid just made honor roll and they just got accepted to this college and it's awesome. So I'm never going to say like you're a parent, but like you are a role model to so many people. And not just on the personal side, but then also it is our job to make sure that our members have time for training. They have resources. They have the equipment they need, like that we are able to get the mission done. Right. At the end of the day, my job is mission accomplishment and troop welfare. And I have to make sure that those two run parallel, but we never weigh one more than the other. Right. I can't say, well, sir, we can't give you an aircraft today because we'd rather do this or things just aren't going well. Like, you have to be able to pick folks up and move the flag regardless of what you're dealing with personally or what's going on at the unit.
Right.
So it's a lot of responsibility. I'd love to tell you that it's easy. It's not. You go home. The drive home, you kind of reflect on the things that you went through throughout the day. There's a lot of things that'll keep you up at night. You know, Colonel Boatwright and I were just talking. We've had a lot of trips together recently. And the one thing that we will think about every night is we've got folks deployed right now. And that is not easy to say, like, well, I'm home, what am I dealing with? It's like, no, that's always on your mind. And you're always feeling that weight. It's like, I just hope that tomorrow is a good day for them.
Yeah.
And days after days until we get them home. And again, it's been a very, what would the word be? Wild times right now, I guess.
Yeah, it is wild.
Within, not just in CENTCOM, but all across the world. So
yeah,
that is one thing that you do carry a lot of that weight with you. And you got to be able to find ways to release that, whether it's, you know, through socialization, whether it's through your own religious thoughts, whether it's through exercise, mm-hmm. whatever it is. But mm-hmm. You've got to find a way to kind of decompress and kind of, you know, you can't be weighted down and stressed out, because then you're not going to be the best chief for your airmen.
Right. And I'm sure going from chief to command chief was even more exponentially heavy, I would say.
You know, it's, yeah, it is. Like, there's a, I had a couple good chats with Chief Hoop, you know, prior to his retirement.
Right.
And he's like, I can explain some of it to you. He's like, but you're not going to really know until you're in the seat.
Mm.
Because in the seat, you were now making sure that the 934 airmen on this base have a voice at the table. That every decision that we make as a wing and a leadership team, how is this going to affect the airmen? So right. you do feel some of that pressure.
Yeah.
Don't forget, though, that one of the duties as a senior NCO, and specifically the chief, is to make sure that we are mentoring our company grade officers as well. Well, come to find out when you get to my seat, like, there's still squadron and group commanders that want to run things by you. So
yeah.
now it's not just enlisted stuff. You're talking through things with officers, and you really just become a sounding board for the entire base.
Right.
So again, my short 3 months up here, starting to see it a little bit more week to week. Got to create those relationships, build that trust, but just be a good sounding board for, again, not just our enlisted folks, but for all of our members.
Is there anything about the job? I know it's only been a short time, though, but is there anything that surprised you that you didn't really expect?
Yeah, good question. You know, going into the position, I kept watching the task tracker that we go over weekly at the mm-hmm. at the wing staff meetings, and I keep seeing these events pop up and these events pop up, and pretty soon now multiple people have access to my calendar and put things on my calendar, and I was like, oh, okay, so I moved into the seat on March 1st. By the month of April 1st, you're going to be on the road, and you're going to be gone for about 5 weeks straight. So yeah, there was it was pretty busy up
yeah.
to start, and you know, my wife and family knew that this was coming, but when you start to live it and it's like, hey, you're home for 2 days this week and then you're back on the road and then next week it's 3 days and the stuff starts to pile up. So I was prepared for it, and my family, I think, were prepared for it.
Yeah.
But until you're there, it's like, oh gosh,
this is
a lot.
This is where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. So you're out doing, whether it's a conference or a training or whatever it is,
yeah.
you're still trying to maintain continuity back at the base. So you're still on your email every night. You're still trying to communicate the texts, the calls. So it never really stops, but I had a good idea what that meant going into it. So I can say, I think myself, I was prepared for it.
Yeah. When do you, or if you remember, that you felt like in your military career that you might actually become a command chief or that you had the goal of?
I don't know. It's like anything else, right? You always have these aspirations.
Yeah.
Like I enjoy working with people. I enjoy leading people. Mm-hmm. I'm not the best guy out there to do it. There's a lot of smart people, make a lot of good decisions. But I think when you have the ability to work with a group and see them hit their goals, and as a team, we're meeting goals and we're winning and we're seeing success, you're helping them through their personal struggles. You're watching them develop. Like, you really feed off of that, right? It really makes you feel good. Like, you are having an impact.
Yeah.
And, you know, like most people will tell you, like, we don't just decide one day, like, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be the command chief someday. There are people throughout your career that will just kind of give you opportunities. And whether they're giving a tap on the shoulder, like, hey, have you ever considered doing this? They lay the groundwork for it. And now, sitting at the position I'm in now, I was just briefing the first sergeants. You were in there. And I said, hey, let's be intentional, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's find the folks that you see, that spark, that little magic. And, like, maybe they've never thought about it because it's too big of a goal for now, or it's just never been on the radar. But give them those opportunities and let them know, like, hey, I'd really like to see you put in for this job, or I think you'd be good at this someday. Plant those seeds and be intentional about the folks that we develop. So, again, I wish I had this master plan and I could lay the roadmap out for, like, hey, here's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, throughout the years, you know, I've moved around a little bit. So I start off in the Marine Corps, and I know we'll get to that in a little bit. I worked as a weapons loader, and then into recruiting, then base training, and then med group, and then up to here. So if you are willing to stay in one spot your entire career, like, it's pretty tough to move all the way up.
Yeah.
You need to have a good grasp of what's going on across the wing, all the different organizations, the groups, how it works, being around different commanders, different airmen, different problem sets, right? You need to be as well-rounded as you can, because at the end of the day, the boss is going to ask you, chief, what do you think? And if I give him a singular perspective of, well, all of my time in this shop, this is what I saw, I don't think it weighs as well as like, well, I've been around, I've done this, I've done that. Right. So it, being well-rounded, not being afraid to take a risk, take a step outside of your comfort zone and be like, well, I could sit here. I'm really good at my job and I really like it. And I like the people around me. But how is that developing yourself? Mm. Right. So never be afraid to take a chance, get out there, make some moves if you have aspirations of moving up.
Yeah, change can be uncomfortable sometimes, but you're right. Like when you actually take the leap to make a change, a lot of times you do look back and like, wow, that wasn't so bad.
It wasn't so bad.
Yeah. Do you have examples in your career of people who came to you and said, hey, I think you would be a great fit for this?
Well, some of them are still out here, so yeah. I don't want to drop any names there. I would say guys like Chief Master Sergeant Retired Tim Tolentino, perfect example. You know, again, you're like, I'm just doing my job, sir. Like, I'm just trying to do the best I can. They're like, yeah, I know, but you need to try this. You need to do this. Everything from senior NCOs to chiefs to, company grade officers all the way up to wing commanders, like having conversations and just giving that little nod of confidence that like, hey, I think you'd be good at this. I think you should try it. And you're not always going to get every job you apply for, right? Yeah, there will be some setbacks and that's okay. Right. I do a lot of counseling with people after a job interview or after selections debate, and they're like, I didn't get picked. I was like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you put yourself out there. Now that group knows that I'm interested. I could go do these other things, and I guarantee they're going to talk to the other commanders, the other chiefs.
Right.
You've now put yourself out there and been vulnerable. And that is hard, right? But you've got to do it. If you've got aspirations to climb that enlisted ladder, and I want to be a master sergeant here, I want to be a senior NCO, I want to make chief someday, I want to be the command chief. You've got to be able to make those moves and those decisions and again, be a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah. So you started out as a Marine.
I did.
How did that happen?
I was a little bit older when I joined. I was 21. Mm-hmm. First of all, the benefit to that is after the months of torturous basic training in tech school, like I could actually sit and enjoy a beer. So I had that going for me. But my three younger brothers were all actually enlisted out here at the
122nd.
Yeah, along with several guys that went to high school. Guys I ran around with every day were joining out here. They were taking advantage of the college. They're kind of figuring it out. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go do this thing. And so I did. And I joined the Marines. And it was a great experience, right? I wouldn't trade it for the world. It just so turns out that I was in the process of starting a young family. And through trainings and deployments and TDYs and everything, I just wasn't present. I've told this story to a lot of folks, but my oldest son, who's now 20, I think I first left the house when he was, a couple months old. And I was gone through deployment and everything else. And I came home and here's this 15, 16-month-year-old child that I'd been watching grow up through pictures and emails and stuff like that. And I instantly throw my hands out. I'm like, dude, I'm so happy to be home. And he had no idea who I was, and it really did break my heart. And I was like, oh my gosh, like just because I watched him grow up and he had no idea who dad was.
Yeah.
And then, I was almost through my first 4 years of the Marine Corps and my second son was on the way. And I was like, I got to make a decision because, the world was not slowing down. We were still right in the middle of GWAT and everything. And so I made the decision to separate from the Marine Corps in 2008, and I started working at the Postal Service.
Okay.
I was a mail delivery guy. It was an awesome job.
Wow.
but I wasn't done serving. Like, I still had that fire. Yeah. And so I talked to my brother and a couple of my brothers, and Isaac Sands, I'll name drop there. Mm-hmm. So he actually brought me out on a night fly and took me into the weapons load shop, and that's the first time I laid hands on the F-16. And I was like, dude, tell me more about this. Like, what do we do? And he's like, well, we load bombs and here's the system and here's the process. And I was like, okay, I got to get in on this. So shortly after, I went through the process to make the transfer over here. I want to say it was August of 2008, joined as a weapons loader, jumped into tech school the following year, jumped on a deployment with the guys out of Atlantic City. And at that point in time, we were in the process of losing F-16s and converting to our A-10s. So I went through the field training for that. And then in late 2010, applied for a full-time recruiting position. And I've been out here at the base ever since.
Wow.
So I struggled early. I was having a conversation with someone yesterday. They're like, oh, so you went from the Marines to the Air Force. What was like? What was that like? And I was like, I can't even explain to you the differences. And they were like, what do you mean? I was like, it's just a different mindset. It's just a different work environment. It's all kinds of things. And early on, like I said, I internally struggled. Like, did I make the right decision? Mm. You know, in the Marine Corps, I left as a sergeant. Like, I had a squad. I had a platoon under me. You were used to making decisions. Like, an E5 in the Marine Corps is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, people, you know, that's they go to you for everything. Mm-hmm. And I get here, and it's like, well, everybody's an E5. And I was like, okay, well, it's different. So sitting around the break room, and I'm watching, you know, techs and masters and taking out trash, and I see seamen sitting around. I'm like, okay, this something has got to give here. And that's the moment that I decided, like, I need to change myself. Mm. I need to have a different point of view and accept the environment I'm in and do the best I can here if I ever want to survive this first enlistment. And so I just kind of, again, flipped gears. I was like, okay, here we go. Do the best I can. Be the best bomb loader I can be. Be mm-hmm. the best recruiter I can be. And things will kind of move for you. So
right. In
a way, personal experience here, it's a little bit of an unfair advantage because you went through something so hard as something that was different. And then coming here, and it's like, I'm just going to apply all those same philosophies, work your tail off, and good things will come for you.
Yeah, that's one way I would describe the Marines is punishing is the word I would use. But I guess if you can use that and switch it into a mental model of not necessarily punishing, but driven, driving yourself versus having someone else drive you.
Well, I mean, and again, like, you know, use the word punishing, crushing, grueling, whatever it is. Like, everybody trains hard.
Yeah.
The Marines have the mindset that they're going to train hard, and the harder that you train, it will make it easier the day that you're in combat.
Mm, right, right.
You need that muscle memory. You need to be able to operate under stress and under pressure and make decisions and not have that paralysis we talked about, because the difference of not moving and moving sometimes mean you or your buddy is getting shot up,
mm-hmm.
right? So you got to be able to make those decisions. So you train, you train, you train, you push yourself, everything. We work towards aggression. Anybody out there who has heard JB, Josh Brown, he's the SEA for the Army Guard. Dude is intense, right?
Yeah.
He's always talking with his knife hand out, and he's like, we are going to go to combat. We're going to be aggressive. Because that's how they grow up. They have to be mentored that way. So then when they get to the situation, you can continue to lead folks. So it's a lot like that. So you're preparing for the worst to make those terrible days a little bit easier. But again, if you come here and you're like, well, okay, this is not a bad day. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to get after it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's a mindset.
It is, yeah. With that mindset, what would you say that you would want your legacy as command chief of the 122nd Fighter Wing to be?
Guy sitting here for 3 months, haven't even thought that far yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, talk with Chief Hoop, and he's, you know, we joke a little bit about like, that's your legacy, that's your legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll just kind of naturally unfold whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Again, being in the position, my goals to this is that it makes sure that we, as I'm sitting there looking at like our retirees list, mm-hmm. we'll look at it like that. We mentioned in a briefing the other day, like we've got 100 folks that are retirement eligible in the next 3 years.
Mm.
And when we say that out loud, you're like, wow, that's a big shift. And so what does that mean? Like, we have to make sure that we have 100 folks ready to step up in new positions with new responsibilities and be able to go up there and continue to fill that void. So from my position, I'm like, okay, so how do we prepare airmen? We need to work with our chiefs, work with our seniors, masters, mm-hmm. like get them ready for the positions they're going to take on, because my position can never go to the commander and be like, well, sir, we're not ready, but we lost 100 people over the last 3 years, and we're just not, failure is not an option, right?
Yeah.
So we've got to continue to push. So one thing that we're going to focus on is making sure that we're building our bench, that we're developing our folks, and making sure we have adequate and better replacements for ourselves, myself included. I can tell you this, well, that when I retire in a couple of years, I want to be able to hand this off to the next person and say, I've done my best with it. You have a ready force.
Mm-hmm.
Take this thing in management and take it to the next level. Yeah. So, again, not really thinking legacy yet, just trying to focus on mission ready force. And then the big thing is going to be is our readiness. We, as we like to say, we fought cavemen for 20 years, and we were good at it, mm-hmm. right? We deployed a lot in the 122nd, whether it's our ACS, our ACC guys. Like, we went out and did great things, but now it is a different environment. We are facing different enemies out there with different tactics, and it's changing day to day. We're watching this on the news. So from my position, I'm like, okay, so how are we going to get our airmen ready? Well, we don't necessarily know who the enemy is going to be. We don't know what the tactics are going to be. We don't know what the equipment or the weapon mechanism may be. But the one thing that we can focus on is our preparedness and our mental attitudes and kind of our toughness. Like, we have got to be ready. And I've said this when I first took over. Every time I talk to a group of people, I try to remind them that, like, we are in the war fighting business. As an Air National Guard unit, we can be tasked to go anywhere, anytime. And we're starting to see that across the United States with other Guard units. So focusing on the mindset that we are warriors. We are warriors. And I don't care if you load bombs. I don't care if you work out in LRS. You're a firefighter, CE, whatever it is. You've got to be prepared at any time to be able to pick up that weapon, defend yourself, defend your buddy. And we've got to do that or we won't survive.
That's right. As command chief, you're always dealing with a lot of information and conversations and data that the airmen on the base will never hear or see, just because that's not their role. You know, their role is to get the jets in the air or to pay the airmen or whatever their role is. You have a perspective that the rest of us don't have.
Sure.
Is there anything that you can share with us from your position to help us understand what to expect in the near future, in the future, anything that you can share from that perspective?
Yeah, so it does. It comes with position. You are privy to a lot of conversations and a lot of data, I guess we'll say, a lot of decision-making, a lot of things that we as a leadership team are trying to figure out, like, okay, this is coming. How is this going to affect the airmen, and how do we get ourselves ready for it? So, you know, again, over the last 6 weeks, I've got to sit at a lot of different conferences and trainings, and just hearing about how the whole Epic Fury unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we was not expected from the force, right? We did not expect to go in and have this operation, and it's still going on. So we see that. We see as units are getting pulled and to go do different things in different locations. So how do we take that information and how do we get that brought down to the wing level so that from every chief down to every airman knows their role? And it goes back to the wing commander's priorities. And it's just be good at your job, right? Be good at your job no matter what it is. And that just know that we've talked about you need to have that warrior mindset. You need to be good at your job. You need to work on your readiness. You need to work on your physical fitness, on whatever it is. Making them a ready force so that whatever we get called to do, that we'll be successful and we'll survive it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is when we see the big picture items and the way that the things in the world are happening, we try to pare that down to the wing level and be like, how can we provide the best ready force and how can we prepare our airmen to be able to survive those things that they're going to be up against?
Right. That makes sense. I know you mentioned fitness. Fitness is a big deal right now for the Air Force.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new information coming out about that.
Yeah, whole new set of rules there that it's going to take, you know, it's going to take a lot of us. You're going to have to be a little bit more intentional about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for years there was a certain standard, and then we hit COVID and they relaxed the standards and the waist measurement went away. And I mean, I see from the perspective of big Air Force, like what we're trying to do. We need to be a leaner force. We need to be a better in shape force. And again, why is that? So we could look good in uniform? Well, I don't know if that's it.
Yeah.
I think it's preparing us for like the things that we may be against in the future. So rather than getting, you know, mad about like, well, now they're going to measure my waist and I've got to run an extra half mile and I've got to do this and that. I truly believe it's only to get us in better shape for, again, those things that we may be up against in the future. And I can tell you this, like, the last thing you can be worried about on a battlefield is like, am I in good enough shape? Right.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to get after. You cannot get tired. Person goes down. You got to be able to pick them up. You got to be able to continue to push on. And if you are not in good shape, if you're not in a good headspace, if things at home are a mess, it's only going to affect your performance.
So all about staying alive and keeping your buddy alive.
It's more important. Yeah. And I'm glad you said that. Like, it's more about keeping the person to your left and right alive.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you this, you will rely on them at some point in time to do the same for you.
Right.
And so it's kind of holding each other to the standard of the accountability. It's like, hey, man, you got my back. And that, And that's why when we talk about like being a wingman, like what does a wingman mean? To me, a wingman is going to be there for me, whether it's I just need someone to chat with, I need someone to talk a decision through, or on the battlefield, like they are going to drag me out. They're going to get me out of there. And I've seen it firsthand. And it really hits home. So it's not just a catchphrase of like, be a good wingman. No, like really be able to take care of those other people because you may be in a situation where you need that from them.
Yeah, exactly. How many years have you been chief now?
3 years.
Okay, 3 years. Yeah. And now you're command chief. So you've had some experience with the triad and how it works, the commander,
yep,
the senior enlisted leader, and the first sergeant. Mm-hmm. So can you give me your perspective on that dynamic and how important it is?
Yeah, I mean, so it's, I will say this, it's going to be different in every organization.
Yes.
You know, the commander is responsible to like, are we going to make the mission, right? They are responsible for that. The chief is responsible to, again, back up the commander and make sure that we are getting the mission done. But you are responsible to make sure that you have the right people in the right places, the right resources to get the mission done. You will lean on some of the morale type things too, but like your headspace needs to be in like, okay, the resources, do we have what we need here? And then obviously the shirt is going to be, I've heard it coined a couple different ways, like it's the white knight or the disciplinary, like however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
The shirt is going to be more integrated in and be able to be your ears and eyes on the ground and come back and be like, hey, sir, ma'am, hey, chief, like this is what's going on.
Yeah.
It works best when you utilize all three, because otherwise, if it's just me and the commander sitting, there's a lot of things that aren't getting up to our level. So we really rely on the shirts to get integrated. Build those relationships and earn the trust of the airmen. And again, it's never that they're bringing up information and be like, well, let me tell you this.
Yeah.
It is a vital piece. It is a vital piece of the triad. And together, when done correctly, it's the way to be successful.
Keeping a pulse on the troops.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I like that. Again, there's lots of things like, again, you're going to be in meetings, you're going to be worried about this, and you're just not going to hear it. So we really, really rely on the shirt, and the same for the commander. The commander is coming to me like, hey, chief, what do we got for the enlisted force? Like, what's going on? So try to stay as plugged in as you can. But, there's no piece, more important. But like I said, ultimately the commander is responsible, but we are his team. We are his or her team to make sure that, again, the mission is a success.
Yeah. What were they looking for? So if there's someone, you know, on base, or several people on base who might be thinking like, someday maybe I could be command chief.
Yeah.
What could they do now to prepare to make themselves to be command chief material?
Well, it all starts with like, it all starts first with, getting promoted up into the top three ranks. It's very hard to get promoted into a master sergeant position. It's even harder than that to get promoted into a senior master sergeant position. And then up to a chief. So first, again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Like my track as I'm sitting in my current position, does this position lead to a senior slot? Does it lead to a master slot and slot? Am I going to have to move? Do I have a track to make senior or chief?
Yeah.
And so again, the answer may be no, just based on the way that the manning document's written up. So you've got to get out of your comfort zone. You've got to broaden yourself, get into another position. And if lucky enough to get promoted up to the chief master sergeant level, at that point, now you've got a squadron, a group to, organize, train, and equip to take care of. And at that point, it's the other chiefs that are going to be competing for that command chief.
Right.
And again, advice on that or what they're looking for. I mean, I think it all boils down to this. You have to be well-rounded. Like you have to know everything from the strategic top level, because the wing commander, the group commanders are going to be coming for you like, hey, chief, what do you think? You've got to look at it from the airman's perspective, from the enlisted force, but you've also got to give them good sound advice on like, hey, this is how I think we need to get this done. So my advice for anybody that wants to, fill this seat someday is make sure that you've got a path that's going to get you up to where you can get promoted up to chief. And then from there, do you want to put yourself through some of the things that fall in my office? So yes, there's a lot of speaking engagements, there's a lot of traveling, there's a lot of meetings, there's a lot of things, but being well-rounded, not being afraid to go out and lead, and public speaking is a large part of it. So if you struggle with that now, continue to work on that. But again, know your own moral compass, be able to make decisions and be comfortable with it, and definitely be comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've been supervising for a number of years now. What are the qualities that you pick out in people that, like, oh, that would be a good person to promote, or that would be a good person to kind of give them more opportunities to broaden their career? Like, what is it that you see in people that, like, that's the person?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because you see it at all levels,
yeah.
right? Like, I've got airmen that mm-hmm. come back from tech school, and, like, they're eager.
Yeah.
They're eager to learn. They're eager to stay engaged. Like, hey, I'm done with this. Like, what else do you need me to do? Like, mm-hmm. what else can I learn about my career field?
Yeah.
If you come to work and you're just like, yeah, I've got 12 months for upgrade training and I'll figure it out, and you don't really put yourself out there to volunteer, or you don't have, you don't jump to want to help with something, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you're going to kind of blend into the crowd, right? But it's those airmen that come back and they're hungry and they're eager and they want to take on more responsibility. That's at the airman level. From the NCO level, it's like, can I trust you to lead,
yeah.
right? Can I leave the room? Can I state my intent and you guys will make it happen?
Mm.
And of course, we'll come back and check on it, but can I trust you with that? If I can trust you with that, then it's like, okay, we can give you a little bit more responsibility.
Yeah.
Now, outside of your AFA senior section, like, can I give you this program?
Mm-hmm.
Can I give you this event to be in charge of? Can you do these other things? And it's no different, like, moving it up to the senior enlisted or the senior NCO level.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, can you not only be a good resource within your squadron or group, but are you now able to help fill wing positions
yeah.
and do other things? So it's just probably some of those tendencies. Like, it's the eagerness. It's the positive attitude, for me, goes a long way. How you treat other people,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's, I think that's what hurts, you know, maybe you saw this on the Army side, and I definitely yeah. saw it in the Marine Corps, is like, they get promoted up and they're like, yeah, I'm going to make everybody's life miserable right. underneath me, because that's what they did to me.
Right.
And you see it, and they kind of, like, that power goes their head a little
yeah.
bit. And it's like, no. Like, you now have more responsibility to make sure that you are treating everybody and everybody's being treated fairly, but yet we're still getting the mission done. So yeah, those are some of the things I look for, is like accountability. Like, if you make a mistake, just own it,
mm-hmm.
right? Tell us about it. We're not going to be mad. We're going to try to figure out how to get past it and do it better next time. Again, it's just showing up, willing to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And then also, like, how good of a teammate are you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to lead every single time,
yeah.
but are you going to get upset when senior man over here is picked to lead something and now you're like, well, it should have been me?
Right.
No. Be a good wingman.
Yeah.
Right. Support them. We're all trying to get the same mission done here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you could distill your guiding philosophy throughout your military career, if you could distill it down into a word or a sentence or a paragraph, what would you say?
Well, down to one, I don't know if I can do that, but just a couple things that have kind of helped me going is, again, positive attitude,
mm-hmm.
Treating people right, holding yourself accountable, and just be willing to do whatever it takes, whatever they're asking from you. You know, you're not going to like every assignment. You're not going to like every job. You're not going to like every supervisor, every commander, right?
Yeah.
What I used to tell a lot of people going up through the ranks is, like, if you don't like the way that things are currently being ran, stick around. Keep working up to the point where now you're the person making those decisions.
Yeah.
And you can learn from your experiences, other people's mistakes, your own mistakes, and try to do it better. And I've mm-hmm. always said that. Like, if you don't like it, stick around long enough till you're in charge. And then it's your organization to run.
Mm. Like it. Thanks, Chief.
Yep.
So the next few months, we have the heat of the summer coming up. Is there any particular message you have for the rest of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we just hit on this in the RSD video, but we are now into our 101 critical days of summer, just meaning the weather's nicer. So you're going to see a lot more outdoor activities, whether going to the lake, vacation, getting on a motorcycle, doing stuff outside. Again, safety is paramount. Like, our airmen are our biggest resource and our biggest mm-hmm. asset out here. We can't do it without them. So take care of yourselves. Take care of others. If you find yourself in a position where you're out with friends and you're enjoying a couple beverages, like, have a plan. Look yeah. out for each other. It goes back to the whole being a wingman. And then I also just ask that, you know, as we enjoy the summer days and time at home with our families, that we never forget that we still have airmen, not just from the 122nd, but the entire Air National Guard and military in harm's way right now.
Mm.
So continue to throw your thoughts and prayers for them. Again, just take care of yourself. Take care of your airmen.
Thank you, Chief. Yep. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, let me know. And I guess we'll part with this. Storm Hell.
This is the official podcast of the 122nd Fighter Wing. Views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the 122nd Fighter Wing, Air National Guard, or United States government. No endorsement of any person or business is ever intended.